welcome to the Ashley Webster Experience podcast alongside Brian Solomon. Today it's us in the studio. We're talking about capitalism versus socialism. It's a big issue. It was the featured theme, if you like, for a week's worth of reports on the Fox Business Network. And the reason being is it's a big issue for this country right now. There are those people out there who believe socialism is the way to go, especially the younger population, those that believe they should have free health care, free education, and so on and so on. And I think it's going to be a big issue, Brian, in the 2020 presidential race, because so many of the Democrat candidates, and there are so many now, but many seem to prefer the socialistic approach.
Yeah, I think that you're seeing this wave of Democrats. About a year ago, we were saying, oh my gosh, it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders. But now it's more and more candidates embracing socialist ideas. And I think that President Trump is very warm to that. He wants that because he's best when he has something to fight against. And so he's going to pit himself, Donald Trump, the American dream, great economy, booming economy versus socialism. And I think that actually might be good for him in the 2020 election.
I think so. And, what is socialism? Is it something different to different people? I mean, socialism at its very core is centralized government, income equality, not inequality, equality. In other words, we all are in this together. We all grow together. But the problem with that is that there is no motivation in that scenario. And you know, I know Stuart Varney talks about this a lot on Varney and Company, but he and I both lived in the UK in the 1970s. And it's remarkable when I look back at how many aspects of industry in the United Kingdom were government-owned, state-owned, state-run, the trains, the coal industry, the power industry, everything you can imagine, the car were built by the government. It was just truly a socialistic society. And the problem was there was no incentive. There's no entrepreneurial spirit. There's no great economic growth. You just exist. No motivation, I think, was the biggest problem. And then you had the strikers, the strikes that each of the individual workers in the different industries were always on strike. The trains were on strike. The garbage collectors were on strike. You name it. It was a fact of life in the 1970s in England. And it was really a wake-up call for me. Of course, eventually Margaret Thatcher came in. She broke up all the unions and she, all these nationalized industries were put into the private sector and things got better. And to me, having lived through that, I can speak with, some authority or at least with the experience of living through that and tell you I know what I want and I know what I would prefer as an individual and as a country as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And isn't that what has made America so favorable to immigrants, right? People want to come here so they can work hard and achieve a better life. If America becomes a socialist country, why would you want to come to America? Because then you can't better yourself. You can only better yourself to what level the government allows you to.
Correct.
And so all these Democrats keep pitching the idea that America is not great. Donald Trump's not making America great again, and a lot of them are saying it never was great. But if it was never great, then why was the capitalistic, mindset that this country has built on, embraced? Why is that so attractive to so many millions of people that come
because
from socialist
countries? Because they like to take a political view that appeals to the most votes, and they believe the younger population, as I said at the beginning. Free everything goes a long way. It's a great platform. Mm-hmm. If I can go to school for nothing, if I can health care for everyone, Medicare for everyone, let's throw away all those student loans. I mean, there's so many things that you mm-hmm. can say that are very appealing. Let's mm-hmm. be honest. I mean, I get that. The question then becomes, well, how do you pay for it?
Yeah.
And it's always on the backs of the rich.
Yep. I mean, in a country this size,
right,
you can't do it.
You can't. You absolutely can't. And this is a society, this is an economy where, having lived in the UK, you kind of reach your place in society. You're not expected to go above it. This is your pigeonhole, if you like. Mm-hmm. And it's a very class-oriented society in the UK. So you wouldn't get a garbage collector living next door to a lawyer, whereas in America, you could. Mm-hmm. And no one would care less. It's all about the individual's drive. And passion. And if you make money, you create jobs, you create wealth, you invest the wealth. Everybody is a benefit of that. Now, those on the other side would say, no, the rich get rich. They keep it all to themselves. It doesn't benefit anyone but them. They have all the tax loopholes that they use. And meanwhile, the poor get even poorer. Mm-hmm. But that's not strictly true. It really isn't. If you've seen a breadline in Russia, you know, okay, let the government handle everything. But believe me, and it's the old joke. Have you been to the DMV recently? Mm-hmm. Government getting involved in anything is never good. You get slowed down with red tape. It's very inefficient. Mm-hmm. There's no incentive to do anything else but just exist and just be. Whereas under a more dynamic economy that capitalism supports, there's this tremendous drive. If you really want to put in the effort, it takes work. And not everybody has to have a college degree. If you have a passion, mm-hmm. get out there. You know, learn a trade. Become an electrician. Start your own company, whatever it is. But there is the things in place in this country that allows that to happen, mm-hmm. allows you to climb the ladder. Mm-hmm. And it's very intoxicating. Look at the great companies in the world today, even in technology, the Apples, the Googles, the Facebooks. Where do they come from? They come from America.
Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why.
There's a reason for that, because there's the opportunity here, the money, the venture capital, all of that is all part of this amazing economy that creates these fantastic companies that dominate around the world.
You know, there's that old saying that people always say, it couldn't have happened anywhere but here. All this success that America has had in a very short period of time could not have occurred if it wasn't in America. You know, you think about how fast the United States has become a world power, faster than any other world empire in world history, I would say.
Oh, in a very short amount of time.
But that's because of innovation. People came here because they said, I want to do something. And when you come with a collective idea saying, I want to better myself, that's when everyone wants to work hard. And by going socialist, you lose that enticement to better yourself, to innovate, to create. And capitalism, I think the big misunderstanding is that people say capitalism as if it's a selfish word. But just because you're a capitalist doesn't mean you can't share the wealth. Capitalists hire people. They pay people. Support other people's ideas.
Correct. They create the wealth and the investments that create jobs and bring the overall economy up. You know, it's okay to be in a capitalistic society, and you can try and fail. And some of the greatest, most successful business people in this country that's ever been produced failed many times. They had an idea, they start a business, it fell down, it didn't work. So they go again and try something else. But that's the beauty of the system. If you've got the drive and you've got the passion and you've got the idea and it's a good idea, eventually it can become a big success. And it's not always measured by money. Of course, that's a big part of it. But it's just you are able to, it gives you freedoms, allows you to grow personally, economic freedoms, and so on. You know, Bernie Sanders and others like him, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they like to say it's not the socialism of Venezuela, it's the socialism of the Scandinavian countries that we really want. I called the Prime Minister's office in Denmark, and great, great people. He was there, got through, and they wanted to talk to us. They're very upset that they get kept pointed at by these Democrat candidates in the United States to say, there's the example of socialism that we love. They said to me, his office and the Prime Minister said, we're not a socialist country by any means. It's capitalism that's created the wealth that allows us to have a very generous social program. They have very low regulation on corporations in Denmark. They want companies to grow. They want them to be successful, both on that level and the individual level. And that creates the money that generates. Now, they pay high taxes, there's no doubt. 55,000 on 55% on any salary above 80,000, but they're happy to do it. It's a country that says, okay, we are a capitalist country because we earn money, we're free to do whatever we want, but we're quite happy for our money to pay for very big, generous social programs. And so that's a decision that Denmark makes. Now, it's also a country that's, 5 million people? I mean, there's more people in Manhattan than there are in the entire country of Denmark. So by scale, that particular model may not work in the United States. It probably wouldn't. But my point is that Denmark's not socialist. Norway is not socialist. They're all rich thanks to oil and gas in the North Sea. Sweden, same thing. They just choose to spend a lot of their money on social programs, but they're not like a Venezuela.
And that's the thing, too. I think when a lot of the those millionaires are saying raise the taxes for the upper 1%. The whole premise, Stuart Varney said this a bunch of times on his show. If you want to pay more in taxes, pay more. That's your decision. And that's what you're saying. They make that decision. We want to pay more. But right. we also make enough where we can say that.
Exactly.
Don't tell me how much I have to make.
Right.
I have to give you.
But their economic model in Scandinavia mm-hmm. is of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's not socialism at all. They just make a decision to spend their money differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be a huge issue, no doubt, in this in this 2020 race.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I don't think is going to – one of the reasons why I don't think it's going to work in this race is because if you look at the messages that President Trump used in 2016, he said, I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to get a new Trans-Pacific deal. I'm mm-hmm. going to rip up NAFTA and make a new deal. I'm going to do all these specific things. I'm going to get a new deal with China. I'm going to be hard on North Korea. Very, very specific things, intangible things. A lot of it, which is he's done, the other ones that he's still in the process
mm-hmm.
of. This one, right now, the Democrats are saying, we're going to socialize medicine. We're going to have Medicare for all. It's a big idea. That's an idea. Not a physical thing that you can really accomplish. Medicare for all. Okay. I'm going to take away student debt. That's nice, but it's just an idea. That's
right.
not tangible. An infrastructure bill is tangible.
Yes.
These are big, lofty ideas that you have to pitch. And it's a typical politician's message during an election. I'm going to do this and that, all these big things. And that's what made President Trump so appealing, because he's saying, listen, there's this deal with Mexico and Canada that it's no good. We got to renegotiate.
Right.
That is something physical, and he did.
Well, and it's interesting because he's all about saving this country money and mm-hmm. not overpaying, getting the short end of the stick every time when it comes to trade agreements. And he's absolutely right. Going to Europe and telling NATO, pay up your fair share, Germany, France. It's not right. We're paying too much money into this. You need to pay your share. He was absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, Brian, on the issues, yes, you can say anything to get votes, but I think it all falls down when you say, well, how are you going to pay for that?
Yeah.
How many trillion of dollars is that going to cost? And where are you going to get the money from?
Mm-hmm.
If they continue to say, well, those that earn a lot of money need to be paying more, well, eventually that's not going to work anymore.
Yeah. And those messages President Trump was saying was that, you know, we're going to save money. We're going to make more money. We're going to get this deal to help us. These are saying we're going to help other people by making you spend more money.
Yeah.
How is that a good message that people want?
I know. It's interesting. And I do think that the booming economy, if it stays this way, will be mm-hmm. very strong for the incumbent president. Because let's face it, it's hard to argue against the unemployment numbers, production. If we can get housing going again a little bit more, mm-hmm. it will just feed into that. And this is all with this trade war going on with China.
Yeah.
If we didn't have that going on, if we can get a deal and it's an equitable deal, then, you know, we could be off to the races.
Just imagine if we were doing all this China trade stuff, I don't know, 5 years ago. The economy, the markets would be down thousands of points, hundreds, thousands of points.
Yeah.
Right now, it's not that far down since before it all started. And that just shows you how strong the economy is.
It is.
You know, so, I mean, that's just an example of why this great capital system that President Trump is really bolstering is working. You're going through one of the biggest trade deals in American history and possibly world history. And the markets react, but not nearly as much as it ever would have.
I think the markets believe it's going to get done one way mm-hmm. or another, whether it's only to save face. The devil will be in the details on this. But if the U.S. can get a lot of what it wants, it would be a great deal. Mm-hmm. And if we can put it aside, China can walk away having saved face.
Mm-hmm. What they care about.
That's
the most.
All they care about. But they haven't had their feet held to the fire like this ever before. The Chinese famously play the long game, and there's this suggestion, well, they're just going to wait until, you know, the president loses the next election. And even if he doesn't, they'll wait another mm-hmm. 4 years, and then they believe they'll go back to a leader who's done it like it's been done before. In other words, China mm-hmm. believes it can get away with it. I'm not so sure that's the case. I'm really not. Because let's face it, the U.S. economy is stronger than China's economy right now, and we have the upper hand. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. So the Chinese want it to get done.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for the Chinese president, Xi, is he has some very hard line officials back in Beijing he has to persuade in order to get a lot of these points agreed on in the trade agreement.
I feel like he would be more, if it was just him that we had to worry about, the deal might have been done by now.
Maybe, but I don't think of the way it was written is going to go down well with those hardliners in Beijing who say, what are you doing?
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Iowa, New Hampshire, people over there, do you think that, probably more Iowa than New Hampshire, but do you really think the voters over there or the other early states, South Carolina, right? Mm. Do you think those Americans down there are looking at, all right, China, that's a real, you know, that's a real enemy when it comes, I'm saying an enemy in trade. Yes. That's something that we have to go up against. And that's something that we can win. That's something that can actually affect my money, especially farmers. Or socialized medicine. Mm. Or school loans. If the socialism does not sound so appealing to the farmer in Iowa, then winning a trade war with my soybeans with China.
True. That's true. I mean, there's no doubt the farmers in this country are hurting. But it appears not all, but many believe the short term pain they'll survive as well as they can in the long run to get a better deal and access more access to the Chinese market. China can't exist without the U.S. and vice versa when it comes to the economies of the world's two biggest markets. They have to get along. They have to find a way to get access to both markets. The problem is that China has not been playing fair since it joined the WTO all the way back in 2001 and made a pledge then that they were going to open up the Chinese market. Mm-hmm. They haven't. You know, they manipulate the currency, they steal intellectual property, they have forced transfers of technology if you want to do business in China. There are all of these issues which really cannot fly in this day and age. They shouldn't have been allowed back in the day, but China is being held to account. And although tariffs I don't think are great for anyone, it is a method that the president wants to use to really make his point. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's going to blink, I think China will blink first.
Yeah, and I think that's what middle America cares about the most. I honestly do. They want to win this trade war.
Yes.
They see their opponent. They see the money. And this is loftily, you know, socialized, these political ideologies, these changes. I just don't think that's going to resonate when the elections come around.
No,
I don't think so.
But it's interesting because the latest polls have Joe Biden ahead of President Trump. This is early days, and who believes polls anyway? But it just shows it's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I look forward to it all. I love the competition. I'm fascinated to watch how the Democrats are going to figure out all of those candidates, who comes through. And then, of course, the main event, whoever takes on Donald Trump, it's going to be fascinating.
And if Biden wins the nomination, do they pull him further left to socialism, or do you think he tries to stay more middle of the ground?
I think part of his popularity in the polls is he is more of a moderate. Mm-hmm. I think he's a moderate who will just kind of pay lip service a bit to the more hard left line, the more left leaning of his party. I just don't think that's very sellable around the country. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what his message is right now. It's something about the workers and saving the middle class. I don't think any of that resonates, given what we've seen with the economy in the last couple of years. So if he makes it through, I'm not so sure. He's definitely up in age. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely relentless just to get through the primary. And then you're up against Donald Trump, who's very good at this, even though he's not a politician. Yeah. And he's also tireless, Donald Trump. And I'd be interested to see whether Joe Biden can keep up.
Yeah, and this is perfect timing for Joe Biden because there's more and more socialist candidates getting in, right? Mm. De Blasio, although he's not billed as a socialist, everything he's done in New York City is definitely not middle of the road.
No.
Definitely not right, and it's definitely not normal left. He's very far left. And even just the little things of him saying he wants to tear down the statue of Christopher Columbus and the famous Columbus Circle. It's these weird ideologies. No, just so far left.
I truly believe he's not going anywhere.
No,
he's
I don't think so
He's not going to appeal
either.
To anyone. It's a purely a personal move on his part to maybe get a cabinet position if Democrats get back in the White House or whenever they do, write a book, go on the speaking circuit. I don't think he likes being mayor of New York. I don't really. He's not in his office very often. Was it 10 days a month?
Yeah, if that much.
He's done very little.
He's out protesting in Germany. Remember that?
Yep, I remember it well. So bottom line for him, he's just doing this and I think for work down the line.
I think that's an example of just showing that there's so many of these socialists that are getting the race because it's the only opportunity they probably ever had, or these far left people that they ever had in a real presidential race, that they're all just throwing their hats in, but they're all going to drown each other out.
They are.
People are not going to know the difference between Andrew Yang and Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And, you know what I'm saying? Bernie Sanders will just have the name recognition. But,
yeah.
I mean, if you go on the street, maybe Manhattan's a little different because there's a lot of far left people. But if you go on the street in middle America, they're not going to know the difference between Bernie Sanders' message and Andrew Yang's.
No, they're not. And it will all sort itself out. It's gotten almost silly now with, what, 23, 24 candidates?
23. I believe.
And who knows, more to come. But that will sort itself out. But I think the overarching issue to bring us back to where we began is it may be capitalism versus socialism, depending on which candidate comes through. And I think the GOP will welcome that.
Well, in the past, we've discussed, you know, what has made President Trump so appealing, right? And I think pretty much everyone agrees that people that were overlooked, these blue-collar conservatives in America that overlooked the flyover states, the coal miners, they love to see a rich person fighting for them.
It's ironic, isn't it? You got a millionaire / billionaire fighting for the common man.
Yeah.
I think what his appeal – I mean, I can be honest. Anytime he's on television, he's doing one of these walk by the media. If he's getting on a helicopter, Marine One, to go somewhere and he talks with people, it's just fascinating to watch him.
Yeah.
He answers questions quickly. If he doesn't like the question, he'll be the first to tell you. He shoots from the hip. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's not presidential, blah, 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 blah. But I will say, personally, I find it very refreshing that someone is not afraid to speak his mind. There's there's no real filter there at all.
You like to hear what someone's thinking, right?
And he often says what many people think, but are too afraid to say.
Yes.
And I think that's the appeal.
It's nice to see that he's not afraid. And I just feel like, you know, that appeal of seeing this rich guy go that's representing the common man in America on the world stage is so appealing. And seeing these Democrat candidates, who most of them are very wealthy in their own right, so they are also capitalist success stories.
Yes.
But seeing them being apologetic for their wealth, for their money, for America's
success.
Oh, yeah,
you have to apologize for success these days.
President Trump saying, no, I worked for my money, and we should all work for money.
Yeah.
And I think that's disrespectful to America's ideology.
It is.
Know? And yesterday, I'm sure you saw Herman Cain over the last few days, you know, on all the shows, especially on the town hall with Charles Payne for the Socialism versus Capitalism. And he's saying, I grew up dirt poor.
Yeah.
In rural Georgia, and now I'm a successful man because of American capitalism.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that this push for socialism is just so disrespectful to to people like Herman Cain, to people like you, to people like Stuart Varney. You guys came from socialist country, and made something
we
of yourself.
Yes.
He came from poor rural South, rural Georgia. That's disrespectful to the American. To American history when you say, no, this is not
good
anymore.
And don't give me excuses. Life is what you make of it.
Yeah.
And you can always say, oh, I didn't get this, I didn't get that. But America is one of the few countries, if not the only country in the world, where you can work hard, have a vision, don't give up, accept failure as a learning experience until you get to a point where you can be a Herman Cain or a Charles Payne. Fantastic stories where it is possible. Never apologize for that.
And
why should you be vilified for being successful and making money and having a social standing? So what? Well done you.
I've never in my life until these last couple years have heard people saying you should apologize for your own hard work.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And
You should share it, too. You should take some of that money that you've done all of that for, because it's your responsibility and that's your choice. As you said earlier, if someone wants to write a check to the government or whoever you want, great. But it's not your job to do all the hard work and then share that with everyone else. It's not right. If someone's not going to make the effort or just doesn't try, who wants a handout, I don't have sympathy.
Bill Gates made all that money. And then he donated a lot of it. And no one ever told him he had to. He wanted to. That's great. But if you're going to say, Bill Gates, you should be ashamed that you created one of the most successful companies in history and made a ton of money.
Right.
You should give that away. That's, you know what I'm saying? Think of that message.
Right.
You know? And if you're raising your kids, listen, kids, I don't want you to work hard. I don't want you to go to school, work hard in school, get a job, work hard. I want you to go to class, do the bare minimum, and get on the socialized program so you could just live a good life.
Yeah.
Are we going to tell children that?
It's true.
You know?
No, you're not going to tell them that. And that's the, you know, socialism just has a lack of motivation about it. And I hate that. Government running anything, I don't like. They need to get their fingers out and unleash the economy. Mm-hmm. No taxes. Get rid of that regulation. Mm-hmm. And then you'd be amazed what can happen.
What's the old saying? Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Yes.
One of the most famous American phrases, and now we're saying, no, thank you.
No. In fact, could you share out those bootstraps to a bunch of people who need bootstraps? You know, listen, we all need social programs. We need to help those that can't help themselves. I totally agree with that. But there comes a point where you don't want to create a whole generation of people who are just dependent on handouts.
Yeah.
That's not right. There are people that need help, and they should get it. It's a responsibility to help them. But then there's a whole nother, as I say, layer, generation, whatever you want to call it, who don't want to make the effort, who could if they wanted to, but don't.
And also, America is the most charitable country in the world.
Oh, by far. It's incredible the generosity of this country.
So it's funny that this is the conversation that's occurring in the most charitable country in the world.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, look at these countries that burn the American flag across the world that get tremendous amounts of money and aid and support, even though they want to burn the American flag. It makes me so mad, to be honest with you. It makes me mad, too, that we spend so much money around the world in far-flung places, Afghanistan, wherever. We build roads, hospitals, schools. Have you been to New Orleans recently? I've had this conversation before. There are still areas that have not been rebuilt since Katrina. I wish we would rebuild this country first, you know, and then whatever's left over, help someone else. That's terrific. But there are many places in this country, Appalachia, many areas, disadvantaged areas that could really use help. And we spend billions of money around the world, often in countries that like to burn the American flag. That's the thanks you get.
You're talking about redistribution. They talk about redistribution of wealth.
Right.
Why don't we redistribute our spending?
Right.
Bring it back. You know what I'm saying?
It's yes.
We should. And there's a lot of talk for this bipartisan infrastructure bill. And like you were saying in New Orleans with Katrina. You even want to go to Rockaway with Hurricane
with Sandy.
Everywhere you go in this country, when I was in South Carolina watching a road literally wash away during a storm, concrete dissolve in water. Everywhere needs it. There's problems, especially in the deep South.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about helping people, spend money there, create jobs, build infrastructure.
Exactly.
You're 100% right.
And that's not being selfish. That's just being, you know, look after yourselves first and then whoever afterwards. But
that's taxpayer. That's their money being spent.
Exactly.
Taxes, right?
So that makes me mad. But anyway, great conversation, Brian. And capitalism versus socialism. I do think that socialism means different things to different people. And the extreme far left is never going to fly in the United States. And I think that's a problem for any candidate that runs on that. But a Joe Biden may want to dip his toe a little bit on the socialistic side, but be more moderate. He may appeal to more people.
Perhaps. And now, do you think this could be the first election where we see a major communist candidate come out of the woodworks?
No. I don't think so.
I don't think we're ready for that.
We're not ready for that. Sure, there'll be people who will spout the benefits, but there are so many cons, as we all know. So, no, I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, we'll talk more about this. We'll have some more guests in, Brian, on this issue for sure. And I can't wait for this political season to really get going. I mean, I know a lot of people say, politics, it turns me off. But when Donald Trump's involved, it is never boring. And I think even watching the fight on the other side, on the Democrat side, is fascinating. They don't quite know how to take him on. They don't know which candidate can do it. I just think the political theater is going to be so fascinating. And we get a front row seat. So great stuff. Brian Sullivan, as always, thanks for being here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you back here next time.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.